Today, we have a fantastic guest on who's going to be telling us about alternative lifestyle, an interesting, innovative, futuristic lifestyle. Stay tuned here to the Wealth Architect Podcast. It's Mark Yeagy here, Wealth Architect and Lifestyle Investor. Let's take your life to the next level. Welcome to the Wealth Architect Podcast. Today, our guest is a very special guest. His name is Jim Gale, and Jim comes to us really from all over the world. My kind of guy. He's done some backpacking all over the world. He's been on boats around the world. He started and built a billion-dollar mortgage company. I mean, this guy has got credentials like you wouldn't believe. But right now, he is the chief storyteller of Food Forest Abundance. And he basically is here to tell us his story. And I can't wait to hear it because I have a feeling that, I know I resonate with a lot of the story and I don't even know much of it yet, but I have a feeling that you guys may resonate with it too. So sit back, grab a scotch, grab a coffee, whatever it is that it takes, sit back and listen to our guest. Welcome, Jim Gale. Hi, Jim.
Well, thank you, Mark, so much for the introduction. And I'm excited. I'm inspired to share this message of freedom and hope with you and everybody listening. This is a message of the ultimate wealth, the wealth of society. You know, previous to John Nash, Adam Smith was kind of the father of economic theory. And he wrote that when the people in an economic system do what's best for themselves, then you've got a successful economy. John Nash did some calculus in his head and figured out if you do what's best for yourself and others, you're actually going to be more successful, right? And that "and others," which won him the Nobel Peace Prize, by the way, or the Nobel Wow. Prize, was the ethics, was to interject ethics into the system. Now, here's the funny part, is what did Hollywood do with this epic concept of do what's good for you and others? Well, they spent about 20 minutes of the show, it was called A Beautiful Mind, showing how John Nash came up with this idea, right?
All right. Hang on a second, hold that. I want to let everybody know who we're listening to here. Give me like a 30-second, 1-minute background story of who you are and how you got to this place, okay. And then we'll get into the story of John Nash because it's exciting.
It is exciting. So my name is Jim Gale. I grew up in Minnesota. I was a wrestler, wrote my goals at 19, thanks to my coach telling everybody to write their goals. I wrote that I wanted to be a 4-time All-American and national champ. He laughed and it happened. It manifested the way, because when you create a compelling vision of yourself in the future that inspires you out of bed, that inspires you to action, that's the key to living a great life. Right. So then I moved to Hawaii, lived there 4 years. Prince was at my bar on New Year's one year, which was really fun. We had a good music there. Then I traveled the world. I moved first to Surfers Paradise, Australia, where I got into studying the greats, the Zig Ziglars and Jim Rohns and Napoleon Hills and all of the great world changers. In fact, that was one of my most, when I read from Napoleon Hill, the guy who studied the greatest people of all time and how they became to be so successful, he wrote, "Whatever the mind of man can conceive and believe it can achieve." So then that led me to the question, well, shit, if that's true, and I think it is, then what can I conceive and believe? And then that started the process, which was about 30 years ago, of asking that question every day, all day long, as of an obsession almost, right? And that's what led to what we're going to get to during your show here, is the solution to all the world's problems.
Wow. So, okay. So hang on just a second. Yeah. Let me summarize two key things that I talk about on this podcast. And that is that you've got to have goals. You've got to have, and you've seen the power of goals manifest in your life. And listeners and viewers, if you are writing down your goals, you are way ahead of the people that don't write down their goals. So you start to program unconsciously your body, your mind, your being, your soul to start moving toward that goal just by writing it down. Now, if you watch The Secret, they were like, you know, write it down and it'll happen. Well, we know that you have to have some action behind it, but it starts with the goal of writing it down. Here's a guy in front of us that, you know, achieved some great things already in his life. Just, and I think he started off the top of the call by saying, because he wrote down some goals. So that's number one. Number two, he's like me. I read Think and Grow Rich every year by Napoleon Hill. He does too. And there are 17 key principles in that book that can propel you to have a great life. It's not just about Think and Grow Rich. It really should be called Think and Grow Abundant. And I see that on your shirt there. So I'll let you go. I just wanted to kind of summarize that intro. Now bring us from that really cool intro and life story to where we are now, what you're doing now, and maybe the philosophy behind it.
I love it, Mark. And please do interject, right? I get so excited. My stories flow. So I wrote my goals again. I was broke at the time. I was just a backpacker. And I wrote that I wanted to have $3 million in 3 years. And I had no idea how I was going to do it. One of my goals was to bring what I had learned in these amazing books to the world. So I got home and through a series of miraculous events, synchronicities or cooperative incidences, I ended up getting into the mortgage business, and over the next 3.5 years did about $1.3 billion in loans, fastest growing mortgage company in the state, ended up in 10 states. And then I got sick of that. It was boring to me after 3 years.
Well, you weren't serving people, right?
Exactly. It was just not inspiring to me because I had made my financial goals. And then I said, there's gotta be more to this because I'm not any happier than I was when I was living broke on a backpack on a beach in Bali. In fact, I'm not as happy as that. So what the heck's going on? So that was a big learning for me. I actually bought a boat, lived on the ocean for a year. And then I found Costa Rica. And in Costa Rica, that's where I red-pilled, I learned permaculture, and I had my first two daughters at the same basic time. And that created just a cascade of inner questioning and then asking, how do we change this? Because what I learned is that there are groups of wicked people who are destroying our planet and who intend to destroy our planet. And it took me a long time to really get that in because it didn't make sense to me. Why would these people do this when it's bad for them?
Yeah, that's the question. Yeah, so why do you think that is? Why do they want to do this?
Well, that is the question that normal people cannot even conceive of. Because it's such a low level. I think they're so full of shame and self-hatred and self-loathing that they get this, they try to control and take power. And somehow that is just a wicked cycle that will lead to the death of everything unless we see clearly through it and we turn those problems into solutions, which will
okay. So what you're saying is that they don't have a goal. Like they didn't write down a goal. I'm going to destroy the earth. Right. Their goal is they're really trying to figure out a way to become self-actualized in their own way. But they're healing so many wounds that their sense and striving for power is creating a destruction. Is that did I get that right?
I have things that I know for certain and I have things that are belief systems. Okay. This for me is a belief system. This is not something that I don't get. How they could be so effing horrible, how they could volunteer to kill 50 million babies, how they could do these things, creating poisons that they know are destructive and they're intending for them to depopulate the world. I don't know how they could think that way is good for them or good for anybody. Maybe, just maybe there is some kind of devilish thing in the divine game of life that we are playing, right? What I know is that we are spirit. We are more than this, and we are living a divine experience. I like to think of it as a game. Right? This is a divine game. It's a lot like Mario, where you've got your obstacles and to overcome to win the game. In fact, Victor Hugo, one of my favorite quotes, he said, there's one thing stronger than all of the armies of the world, and that is an idea whose time has come.
Oh, yeah.
I love that because that's so true. And this thing, the idea, not the new idea. He didn't say that. He said the idea whose time has come.
Wow.
Now, this is so fascinating to me. When I say what the idea is, everybody who's listening to this has not only heard of the idea, but they can describe the idea in glorious, joyful detail. And yet they believe that the idea is a utopic fantasy. It's an illusion. It's not possible. My friend.
So let me jump in there because you talked about Costa Rica, and I believe, because I read a couple things about you, that Costa Rica was a pivotal spot in your life. And you mentioned the word permaculture. So a lot of people don't know what permaculture is. So maybe you can explain kind of what that was, because I have a feeling that's going to lead to what we're going to be talking about.
Yes, it is. Permaculture is the scientific way of saying the idea whose time has come. Permaculture is the scientific way. The Garden of Eden is the spiritual way. So I learned permaculture, which is a sustainable agricultural design science. Now, what does that mean? It's a fancy way to say that there are plants that like each other, that get along, that actually become more productive when you put plants in a guild, a community of plants that support each other. You've got your nitrogen fixers and your green manure plants and your food producing plants. So when we mimic natural systems or God's systems, however you believe that, then you can produce epic amounts of abundance everywhere. And there are 40 million acres of lawn in the United States alone. When we turn 50% of the 40 million acres of lawn into perennial edible landscapes, basically when we just change out our ornamentals for food producing ornamentals, we reverse mass extinction and deforestation, cancer, diabetes, and heart disease trends. We end world hunger, and we create economy, a foundation of freedom that takes out the tyrants.
So 40 million acres of ornamental land that we're using to make our houses look pretty, and we're chasing after a lawnmower to just to make them look pretty. When that kind of land, now I'm not saying everybody's going to turn their front lawn into a vegetable garden, but there are ways to do it that maybe you don't have to mow the lawn, right? Maybe you can make it pretty in other ways. Is that kind of what you're saying?
That's exactly right. And one of the layers in there, you said vegetable garden, right? There's different types of growing food. There's the forest down the street from your house that you like walking in or you like looking at that actually raises your vibration when you just look at it, right? Who manages that forest?
Yeah, nobody.
Nobody. Nature, God, source manages the forest. Yep. The forest manages itself. Yep. A perennial edible landscape is a food forest that manages itself. The Amazon rainforest was a designed agricultural system, a food forest 5,000 years ago.
Wow. Yeah, true.
You can look that up, by the way. Archaeologists discover the Amazon rainforest was a food forest, right? So that's what we're talking about. When we simply plant food everywhere, then we turn half the lawns into these food forests. We still keep some of the lawn, but we take out the poisons. Yeah. The poisons are ridiculous. They come from our air, our water, our soil, and our minds through mass media. Yeah. So we expose the poison producers and take out the poisons. That's when we'll know that we've won the war.
I love it. I can tell you, Jim, I have a place up in North Carolina. It's in the middle of nowhere. It's an old schoolhouse that I'm rebuilding and rehabbing, actually not rebuilding, but you know, it's a gigantic thing that 200 students used to be here, and it's my house now. And it's located, you know, in nature, right? There's nature all around me. There's streams around me. And I can tell you, when I drive up into the mountains, because I spent some time in Florida, I spent some time in North Carolina. When I drive here from the mountains, I feel different. I don't know if it's because I'm getting bombarded with fewer radio waves, Wi-Fi waves, EMFs, television signals, or just because I'm getting that beautiful feminine energy from the nature that I'm around. I just feel different. So I think you're absolutely right. You're picking up an increased vibe by putting your feet in the sand, by feeling like you're part of the earth, by working with the earth. I just planted 45 trees this spring. So I'm excited about that. And the next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to be planting an apple orchard, probably a very small one, but you know, I'm getting there. So I want to get into the next phase of what you're doing now, but I want to take a quick break and thank our sponsor. Hey, it's Mark Yeager here to tell you about our cash flow machine trading program that's designed to teach you how to make safe, reliable income. Now, we shoot for 2-4% a month of income and growth in your portfolio. And we have courses to teach you how to do this yourself or inside a mastermind community. And the best part of that is it only takes about 20 minutes a week to implement. Now, while 2-4% a month doesn't sound like much, I show you exactly how we took my IRA from $111,000 to over $500,000 in just 19 months without huge risk. I'm not telling you this to brag, just to show you that you could do this too. So to learn more about this program, go to cashflowmachine.io. That's cashflowmachine.io, and you can learn more. All right, so we're back with Jim Gale. And Jim, why don't you bring us fast forward if it's time and tell us what you're working on now. I know you're down in Florida. You're working on a really cool project. And tell the listeners and viewers about it.
We're working on creating what we're playing with, which is just, that's a big deal, by the way, this idea of working and playing. Yeah. I'm enjoying everything I'm doing. People are saying, Jim, you're working 20 hours a day or 18 hours a day. I'm like, I don't work at all.
No, I'm not. Yeah.
I do work maybe an hour a day where I'm like, I don't want to be doing this. And then I find somebody who does want to do that to delegate it to. So we're creating Galt's Landing after John Galt from Atlas Shrugged. And it's a completely off-grid, the first of its kind in the world that I know of, completely off-grid luxury community. We're on a private 430-acre lake. We've got the only dock on the lake. There's a runway. My buddy's a pilot, my partner, and there's a runway. People can park their small jets or their planes in their garages. We don't own the runway yet, but that's coming. So we're using this, we're doing this to create a demonstration site for freedom. What does freedom look like? It looks like Galt's Landing. And when we show that every day, our job, our goal, our joyful obsession is to inspire and empower other people to do the same because it makes sense on every level.
So what give us an example of what the freedom looks like. What does that mean?
The freedom looks like walking outside and having 1,000 different edible and medicinal plants everywhere. Within a 2-minute walk of my house right now, I've already got thousands of plants and about 200 different species. Like you mentioned doing an apple orchard. So a monoculture is not natural, right? Okay. What's natural is diversity. Diversity in plants and in thought is the foundation of strength of humanity and of our natural world.
Sure.
So what we do is we design diversity into the systems. That way, if a certain caterpillar or a certain locust or a certain animal comes into a system, they're meant to pick on a particular thing. If you have a monoculture, then you can have a plague of locusts or a plague of army worms or moths or whatever. When you have diversity, the creature will pick on one or two or maybe 10% of the edibles, of the things growing. But by that time, first of all, they won't grow into the trillions. And the nature will balance it out. So I'm sitting there in my food forest the other day, and I'm looking at some caterpillars that got a hold of one of our kale plants. And then the wasps came in, and the geckos and the chameleons came in, and the spiders built webs right exactly where they should build webs. And we actually got it on film where the wasps are coming and taking the grubs, right? So what do we do with these creatures normally? We take the poison cans out and we kill our frontline generals who are protecting our food.
I just saw something on Netflix a couple of months ago. I'll be darned if I can remember the name of it. And it was about a guy that did this. He took a farm and then he realized that it was skewed toward one thing. And then the moths were killing it. So he had to do something with the moths. So then he brought in this other guy and eventually it balanced out. The guy that designed it died. I can't remember exactly what happened, but it was really fascinating how there was always a piece of nature that they could bring in to balance things out.
Yes.
And that sounds like exactly what you're talking about.
Oh, yes. Bill Mollison famously said, he was the founder of permaculture, by the way. He'll be recognized. I get emotional at times. In the future, he'll be recognized as one of the most important figures in the history of humanity.
Wow.
Him and David Holmgren and Jeff Lawton and all these wonderful people who created, this is not hypothetical. Like this is a fact. What I'm talking about, all of it has been proven all over the world. But
go ahead.
You don't have a snail problem. You've got a duck deficiency.
Exactly. You know, I'll tell a quick story. A few years ago, I'm Greek. So I was in Greece, I don't know, about 6 years ago. And a friend of mine was in Athens and he says, hey, what are you doing today? And I said, nothing. And he said, well, you want to go to my little village in the middle of of the country. It was in the Peloponnese. It's a peninsula there. And I said, yeah. So it was about a 2.5-3 hour drive. So we got in his car, we drove to his little village, and there's about 200 people in this village that this guy grew up in. And he was raising olives and oranges. And he even has a solar farm, and he's, you know, he's really quite an interesting guy. And then the next day he said, hey, you want to go see a friend of mine? And I said, sure. So we got in his car, and I really didn't know anything about it. He goes, the guy lives up in the mountains. And we turned the corner. I mean, we had been driving for like a couple of hours, winding roads, climbing up in the mountains. We were like in the clouds, in the fog. It was really amazing. And as we turned the corner, there was a sign. It's normally you'd look for the sign of a city there, a town that you go into. And I was waiting to see a town in written in Greek. And it was not written in Greek. It was written in English. And it was called Eco Green. That was the name of the town. And I drove in there, and it was a Greek guy that came to the U.S., got educated at MIT, went back to Greece, and bought this little town, this about 500-year-old town. All the buildings were falling in. And he bought this town, and he associated with himself with a group called Wolf. You might have heard of Wolf. It's an organic farming group. And people would come to this place, kind of like a commune, live there, provide 3 or 4 hours of labor, and build a permaculture community. So they were rebuilding each of these little houses, making little lofts and Airbnbs about them, and places for themselves to live and for guests to live. And I was just so fascinated and taken by this, because it was in the middle of nowhere, but it was so abundant. They had one donkey to pull the plow. They had, you know, this incredible view, and they had this really, and there were only about 10 or 12 people there, but they had built a yoga, you know, yurt, big yurt that you could, you know, without any screws. It was just really interesting. And it opened my eyes to the fact that you can do things naturally, and that there are people that want to do things naturally, that want to support you in your goal, that want to change the world. And this permaculture, this was the first time I saw it. So when I heard from you through a mutual friend, Matt Britt, I was like, I gotta talk to this guy.
Oh, I'm so glad you reached out. We're just getting started. This is the tip of the iceberg of the strategy and the layers of the strategy that we've put together.
All right. So what can we do individually? And then I'll, you know, to kind of advance this cause. And then maybe I'll ask you, you know, what you're doing, how we can get a hold of you. And then we'll say goodbye.
All right. So we launched about 13 months ago with 7 people. Now we're about 800 people around the world, where we design and install food forests. So our designers, we have 45 professional food forest designers.
Wow.
And yeah. And now designer, they spent a lot of years learning how to put plants together in a way that is the least amount of energy in, the least amount of maintenance, and the highest yield, right? Like a fruit tree guild is actually less maintenance than a lawn. So yeah. People talk about, I don't want to have that extra job. No, a fruit tree guild or a food forest is actually a time and money and energy savings. It's a health and abundance factory, right? So yeah. We do that. We also have a cooperative that I was going to do a franchise. I spent about $250,000 getting the franchise ready. And when I got 330 pages of BS, it made me sick. I threw the whole thing in the trash. We now have a 2-page document that speaks to the voluntary exchange of value. We provide massive value. Our cooperative partners then are the ones who actually install the food forests for people. So if anybody wants to be in the business of helping people grow food in the midst of a food supply chain disaster,
yeah,
it's a good business to be in.
Okay. So how do people figure out how to do that? Get a hold of you. Maybe you can help them. How do we help you out too?
Yeah. So jim@foodforestabundance.com, or you can go to our website, foodforestabundance.com, and we can, you can check us out. You see a lot of different assets on there. We've got TV shows coming. We've got books coming, documentaries. Like, it's literally the idea whose time has come. It's going global fast.
All right. I'll add those to the show notes for the show, but it's foodforestabundance.com, right, everybody? All right. So if you want to find out more about this amazing stuff that Jim is doing, hey, listen, you know, we talk about wealth all the time, but wealth is not always in our money, guys, right? We know that we need to have wealth in our health. We need to have wealth in our time, our free time, right? We need to have wealth in our relationships. We need to have abundance all the way around in our lives to really live a fulfilled and wonderful life. And Jim is a part of this movement. He understands abundance. So I know I talk about inflation. I know I talk about, you know, crypto and Bitcoin and all these other things. And I know, Jim, I probably could go on an hour long conversation about Bitcoin, but we'll leave that for another time. But, you know, it's also about this supply chain stuff that we've got coming on. And I can tell you guys, we had an opportunity to stave off a supply chain, but I don't think they wanted to not have a supply chain issue. I think it leads to this whole thing that Jim might've been talking about. Call me a tinfoil guy, call me a conspiracy theory. There might be something to some of these issues that we're seeing, rampant inflation. We all saw it coming. If you print money, it causes inflation. If you lock people down for 2 years and you give them free money, it causes inflation. It causes supply chain issues. So the solution here is permaculture. That's one of the solutions, is to go out in your backyard and have something that's indigenous to the area that can feed you and your family, rather than having to drive in a car to a grocery store that they brought in some avocados from, you know, South America, instead of having you grow your own avocados or whatever fruit is local to your area. Sorry, I got off a little bit on that, but could tell that I think that that's a part of what the future really is all about. So I can understand why you get emotional, and I can understand why this is such an important thing for you. And it should be an important thing for all of us to consider if we possibly can, if we live in a place or an area that we can kind of contribute to this movement. So Jim, I want to thank you for being a part of the Wealth Architect podcast. I want to thank you for your message. I always tell people, never give up your power in your health, your wealth, or your time. And I appreciate you for your time. Thank you so much. So we'll see everybody on the next edition of the Wealth Architect Podcast. You've been listening to the Wealth Architect Podcast with Mark Yeagy. Follow us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Like and subscribe on YouTube. Share and tell your friends. See you soon.